This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 weeks ago today, an enormous landslide obliterated more than a dozen homes in the California beach town of La Conchita and killed 10 people. It was not the first landslide to hit the town, and nobody believes it will be the last. Although county officials restricted construction of new homes there after the landslide in 1995, they have not asked residents to leave La Conchita. In fact, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vowed to help them rebuild. Millions of us live in risky places. The danger may not be as imminent as it might seem today in La Conchita, but we can be pretty sure that there will be hurricanes in Florida, floods along the Mississippi, earthquakes elsewhere in California, just to name a few of the disasters we know to expect. When people decide to live in risky areas, when, if ever, is it the government's responsibility to say they have to leave? How much should taxpayers be asked to pay to make it safe? Later this hour, we'll visit Johnny Carson's hometown and take your calls on the man who defined late-night television. But first, government's role in high-risk areas. How dangerous does it have to be before it's too dangerous? If you live in a place that has a high probability of being hit by natural disaster, is it government's job to make it safer and to help rebuild no matter what? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is a man who's facing a lot of these questions. John Johnston is executive officer of Ventura County. That's where La Conchita is located. He joins us on the phone from Ventura, California. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
Why are residents being allowed to return to La Conchita?
Well, yes, we've been asked that a lot. It's a question of public policy and constitutional rights. We have, on the one hand, private property and freedom of choice. On the other hand, the government's responsibility when imminent risk or the imminent threat of disaster is there. And during an imminent threat, we step in. When that threat abates, people have their rights, and we recommend that they not put themselves in harm's way, but that's a choice they're allowed in our system to make. So I guess that's the explanation for now.
You've been quoted in the papers as saying it's the land of the free and the home of the brave, but not necessarily the smart.
Yes, and I would apologize to anybody who felt that was insensitive and offensive, but I stand by the statement that, you know, the whole history of this country has been about, you know, people's rights and freedoms to make decisions, and not necessarily decisions that we all agree on. Some of the decisions I make, I think a lot of people would think aren't smart, but the way we're set up, I have the right to do that, and the homeowners up there do, and I'm not suggesting that they're stupid, but people who live in Florida assume a certain amount of risk, as you've said earlier in your program. People who live in California also assume a certain amount of risk, and the folks in La Conchita are doing the same thing. As long as they assume that responsibility and risk, then God bless them, and let's hope that we don't have another disaster like we've just seen.
Yet they're also asking, I guess, their own town and the taxpayers of the county and the state of California to help them out to prevent future disasters. This could cost quite a bit of money.
Correct. It could. I think it's understandable that they would ask, and I think we have an obligation to explore and to answer their questions, but most of the information I have make that a real dilemma, because we know of no early warning system or system that would allow them to leave in time, and we know of no structural engineering solution that holds back an ancient mountain landslide. So I'm not sure where in all of that lies the solution, but they are certainly welcome to, you know, ask the questions, and I think the government does have an obligation to engage in the discussion.
After the last earthquake in 95, and this may not have been when you were in office, excuse me, I don't know, but...
That's correct. It was prior to my time, but I was in the county at the time.
But the county did erect regulatory hurdles that made it extremely difficult for anybody to build new homes in La Conchita.
Right. They attempted to provide, you know, the necessary caution and, you know, precaution and to provide the necessary warnings to people so that if a person were to make that decision, they would do so with, you know, adequate information. And they put a, what they call a yellow line around the community as a geological hazardous area, and they required that in order to obtain a building permit, you had to have a qualified geologist certify that that was not going to worsen the existing situation.
I'm sure this question has also come up. I would guess that the alternative is to buy the people out who live there in La Conchita and say, look, it's just not safe. As I understand it, the mountain is still moving.
Well, yeah, most of California is, if not all of it. My understanding from all the people I've talked with is that they are not interested in selling. That is their home, and as long as they live within the existing laws of the state, they expect to be allowed to stay there. And at the present time, no one is stepping forward and saying we want to buy up all the properties and evict everybody. So it is a delicate balance.
And after that last earthquake, I think $400,000 spent on a restraining wall, which we all saw when this the film on TV, when this most recent landslide hit, it clearly was utterly inadequate.
No, it wasn't inadequate. It was never built to hold the mountain. It was meant to keep rocks from rolling onto the streets so that they could keep the streets passable during normal conditions. And that was clearly understood at the time the county agreed to do that much. But it was understood that that was not a retaining wall.
Mm-hmm. Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Johnny Johnston, the chief executive officer of Ventura County. That's where the town of La Conchita is located. And as you all recall, 2 weeks ago, a landslide hit the town. 10 people were killed. Let's get a caller on the line. And this is Sergey. Sergey is with us from Massachusetts.
Yes, sir. I completely disagree with you, what you were saying. If people were asking if taxpayers' money should be spent to help some people if they live in dangerous places. I bought a house recently near the Connecticut River, which is a big river, and I chose to live there. I know it's a dangerous place, could be sometimes, and I don't think if the river goes above its banks, I don't think the government should help anybody. In this case, I'm talking about myself because I chose to live here, and I know it could be dangerous, and that's, I think, most probably what people would come to.
Do you have flood insurance, Sergey?
Actually, I do. I do have a flood insurance.
So you're paying a premium to live where you live.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
I'm Johnny Johnston. The Connecticut Valley is, at least to some people, awfully pretty too. Perhaps not to the level of La Conchita, California, but I'm sure you're hearing similar things from the people who live there.
Well, I think there's an example of a misunderstanding. Sergey says he totally disagrees, and I don't think he and I have a total disagreement. I did not suggest that everybody else should have to pay for people who choose to live in risky areas. I said government has an obligation to enter into conversation with any of its citizens to see whether or not there is some solution. And I preface those remarks by saying all the information we have says that there is not. We're not suggesting that we indemnify these folks. We're saying that if they want to talk to us about ways to do it, we'll explore it. But everything that we have looked at for the last 10 years tells us that it's a problem that only can be avoided. It can't be, solved.
So, Sergey, by the way, thanks very much for the phone call. So if people choose to live in this place where, as you say, there is no fix, you can't fix the mountain behind La Conchita.
Or at least we haven't discovered that fix yet.
It's entirely possible that you'll end up telling the people there, look, we can't ask you to leave, we can't force you to leave, but you live there, you're on your own.
Well, to a substantial degree, that is what is being said now. That we're not telling them they can't go there. We're not encouraging them to go there. But if they do so, we've put out rather strong warnings saying, enter at your own risk. And we had a number of other deaths in the county during the same period, from people who were involved in ultralight aircraft to people crossing streams on ropes to people living in camper trailers with heating devices that caught fire. We don't prohibit the behavior. People can do that, and the consequence it can be you know, devastating. But I guess that's kind of where we stand with this, that people have legal choices they can make, and they assume that risk and responsibility, and we will do our part. Our part, Sergey must have misunderstood my comments. We do not see our responsibility as stepping in and solving the unsolvable at the taxpayer's expense.
Let's get another caller in. This is Don, who joins us from Falcon Heights, Minnesota.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I have a bit of a misunderstanding here because, you know, I take a look at the governments throughout the United States. They have the ability to condemn a building, to say, well, you can own it if you want it, but nobody can live there. It's an apartment building, that's fine, but nobody can be there because it's too dangerous. Why not with an area like La Conchita?
The word that dropped out on that cell phone was condemn. Go ahead, Johnny Johnston.
Okay, well, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding of the situation we have here, and it may apply to buildings that have been condemned, we call that red tagging out here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the authority to do that when the building itself is structurally unsound. And we have red tagged many of the buildings in the La Conchita area. But we do not red tag them because they may become structurally unsound in the future because of an earthquake, a hurricane, a tornado. So landslides and these kinds of natural disasters are separate and aside from the structural integrity of the building. So it's a different kind of question that we're faced with. But, yes, we do condemn buildings when they're not structurally sound and don't allow them to be occupied.
Is there a moral issue in your mind at all, Johnny Johnston?
Well, there's always a moral issue in everything. Give me some more information.
Well, it's unsafe. You know, what else can you do but warn people, I guess? But
right, yeah, moral responsibility to advise people. Is there a moral responsibility to protect everyone from themselves? You know, that's the dilemma.
Well, that's the question I guess we're going to be asking for the rest of the program. Thanks very much for being with us, and good luck with your situation there.
Okay. Well, thank you for being interested.
Don, also thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. Johnny Johnston, whom we just spoke with, is Ventura County Executive Officer. He oversees the county's response to the landslide in La Conchita. He was with us by phone from his office in the county seat of Ventura, California. When we come back, we'll continue talking about the role of government in mitigating the risk of natural disaster. Coming up next, an argument for government to take a stronger role in deciding where people should live. 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about whether and when government should be able to tell people not to live in places at risk for natural disasters. Of course, you're invited to join us. If you've rebuilt your home after a natural disaster, did you put it in the same place or did you move? Have you had family or friends lose a home, and are they rebuilding or relocating? We want to hear what you think government should do to help prevent damage to communities before the disaster hits. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. While county governments deal directly with damage to communities by natural disaster, it's often with monies provided by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Joining us now to discuss how government acts on both the national and federal level to mitigate disaster is Professor Richard Cunningham of the University of California's Hastings College of the Law. He has specialized in land use regulation for the past 30 years. Professor Cunningham joins us by phone from his office in San Francisco. Thanks very much for being with us today.
I'm happy to be here, Mr. Conan. Good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you. What is it that local governments do to influence where people live?
Well, understand that we do things very differently now than we did 25 years ago. The sorts of problems that you've been discussing, earthquakes, landslides, we've got numbers of those in California. We join them with wildfires and then just all of the other kinds of floods and disasters that you've discussed. The traditional land use controls were zoning and planning mechanisms. And for much of that time, we simply didn't very well understand these problems, the La Conchita landslides. It hasn't been until the last 20 years or so that engineers have really begun to map landslide or unstable soil types in California. And I dare say that if something like La Conchita were to be proposed for development now, it would be turned down out of hand. California, like New York and many other states, has environmental assessment requirements. We would do what's called an environmental impact report on that land, find out that it was geologically unstable and say homes are prohibited here. It would be too dangerous. So we'd simply prohibit them outright in the first place. And as in reference to the concerns discussed a few minutes ago, that would probably not be considered an unconstitutional use of the police power. We could restrict those lands where there is clear danger of human occupation.
Yet La Conchita is hardly the only place, the only grandfathered town, if you will, that's built in a dangerous place.
No, absolutely not. We've had a very similar problem in Northern California in the sea bluffs that are immediately south of San Francisco, little towns of Daly City and Pacifica. And during storms over the last few years, they've had severe shore erosion there, much like many areas on the Gulf Coast and the East Coast. But the shore erosion here literally would eat back 20 or 30 feet of high bluffs, and houses were simply having the land fall out from underneath them. And that was on national television as houses teetered over the edge.
Mm-hmm. But we've also seen the Governor Schwarzenegger went down to La Conchita and said, "We will rebuild." It's a natural impulse of any politician to say that after a disaster, of course. But what's government's responsibility in that situation? The people say, we just heard the county executive say, as far as they know, science says there's no way to fix that mountain and make it safe.
That's right. And in my view, in my personal view, it's clearly a governmental responsibility to prevent this very high risk of loss of life and property in an area like Conchita. Conchita is different than the wildfires. It's different than the earthquakes. We know exactly what's happening. We can look up the hill and the engineers tell us this thing will continue to come. So it's a matter of time. With wildfires, we can build better structures. We can space them out differently. We can map it out. Earthquakes are more less finite in location, but the landslides, that's an easily measured task. And I would say that they should do there what they did in Pacifica and Daly City, which is to eventually buy out those several lot owners whose homes are clearly going to be wiped out by these natural causes.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation. And Kevin is with us in Savannah, Georgia.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead. You're on the air, Kevin.
I enjoy the program very much. Thank you. I just wanted to bring up a point regarding development around the coastal region. I've grown up on the Gulf Coast and on the Atlantic Coast most of my life. Been through two major hurricanes, Frederick and Camille, and I think that development and developers have some sort of responsibility in this equation. It just seems to me that the consequences of developing in these areas are not really being answered by those who are actively promoting it.
What do you think, Richard Cunningham?
I agree with that to a great extent. It's partly a matter of time frame. Next summer, you'll go out to a beautiful beachfront community, and there's white sand in front of you and trees somewhere behind and other houses, and you think that's great. You don't see it during winter. You don't see it over a long period of time in which coastal erosion continues and some of these houses are carried out, and you may or may not watch television during the hurricane that wipes out some section. So, of course, a number of counties and coastal zone controls in some states are beginning to prohibit development along the coasts. I used to take a very strong stand on this. I didn't like the idea of buying out people who have assumed the risk, as earlier callers were describing it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've come into an already built-up area where the expectation of the people around you is that it's okay to build here, that this is the norm, then I think we've got a problem with people who have their whole personal equities tied up in those homes, and we're telling them they should go somewhere else. Even then, the coast is less a risk than something like the landslide.
Hmm.
It may or may not erode there for 20 years. The landslide is coming, and we can see exactly where it is. So I see them as somewhat different.
If I could, a follow-up question, mm-hmm. or a follow-up point regarding insurance rates. I think that also you have a situation that's been evolving over the last couple of years as more and more development has crowded the coastline. You're starting to see insurance rates begin to climb astronomically after people have already moved in, and they're almost—it's almost as if they're held hostage to the rate increases. And I'll take the rest of the comment off the air. Thank you again.
Thanks for the call, Kevin.
I don't know how to respond to that. the insurance game is a whole other complicating factor here.
Well, you talked about the idea of saying, all right, the government buying people out and saying, I'm sorry, you just can't live here, places like La Conchita. Where do the constitutional rights of property owners enter into this? Johnny Johnston, the county executive, is talking about that.
Yes, and the last time the U.S. Supreme Court came closest to this is a famous case, the Lucas decision in 1992, that involved building on the eastern shorefront. And there's a real concern that a complete prohibition on construction can be seen as governmental taking of the land. It's Fifth Amendment, land shall not be taken without just compensation. And in that case, they awarded dollar compensation to a developer who himself was building a house in an area he had earlier developed. And there's a big problem there of what he expected. He knew what was coming, and in that case, I fall on the side of saying he was taking the risk, and I'll be darned if I should use my government tax dollars to bail him out. On the other hand, said the Supreme Court in Lucas, if something falls within the nuisance law, if it was something that the common law would always have prevented, then we don't owe landowners anything. They don't have a property right to do something where it's so clearly unreasonable, which again would take you back to some coastal situations, would take you back to those who would build anew in a place like La Conchita and say there's no property right to be protected here, therefore we don't owe them compensation. For the established homeowners in La Conchita, I think that the pragmatic political realism is that those folks need help for something they never saw coming. And the best way to take them out is to do what Pacifica and Daly City and Napa and the flood control areas have done, and sometimes that's to use monies to buy out the private individuals, public monies.
Richard Cunningham, thanks very much for being with us today.
Yes, sir. My pleasure.
Law professor Richard Cunningham of the University of California's Hastings College of the Law, and he joined us by phone from his office in San Francisco. Government is involved in disaster mitigation by providing emergency funds after the fact, and assistance from FEMA is available both for primary homes of hardworking small-town residents and for second or third homes of the wealthy. While this subsidizing of rebuilding may send the wrong message to some, others say that government restrictions on living in dangerous places is not necessarily the answer. Joining us now is Bridgewater State College Professor of Philosophy Ian Scoble. He's the author of the chapter Liberty, Policy, and Natural Disasters in the book Liberty and Hard Cases. He's with us now from his home in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Is it realistic to suggest that the government should not allow people to live in places with a high risk of natural disaster?
Oh, I don't think it's realistic to tell people that they aren't allowed to live in those places. It's just I think that they ought to not have the costs of those high risks involuntarily passed on to other people through subsidized insurance policies that don't force them to bear the actuarially fair costs of their living choices.
And what about the costs of, for example, I suspect the rescue efforts in La Conchita are costing the county and the state quite a bit.
Well, obviously, the government rescue apparatus ought to be brought to bear to rescue people who need rescuing. But if people insist on living in places where there's a known danger of needing those kinds of services, then they ought to be responsible. They ought to take responsibility for those choices and bear the additional costs of those rescue efforts.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that...
excuse me, Professor, we're just having a little difficulty with your phone. I understand you're on a cordless phone. If you could just move closer to your base.
Is that a little bit better?
Let's hope so.
Okay.
Okay. Go on. I didn't mean to interrupt your answer.
Oh, I was just going to compare it to with smokers, for example. Smokers are certainly entitled to go to the hospital and seek medical care, but there's a known risk of smoking, which causes health insurance companies to charge smokers higher premiums for their care. So I was trying to make an analogy there between people who know that they're living in a hurricane zone or an earthquake zone or a mudslide zone ought to bear the cost. costs of that risky behavior.
We are speaking with Ian Scoble, professor of philosophy at Bridgewater State College, Massachusetts, as we're discussing the issue of discussing the issue of government mitigation of natural disaster. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line in the conversation. And Patrick. Patrick is with us from Florida.
Hello, yes. I'm actually from the La Conchita area. Currently, I'm on a business trip in Florida, and I happen to pick up on Mr. Johnson's conversation regarding the La Conchita. And one of the things that I did not hear him mention was the neighborhood after the last landslide initiated some of their own investigation, and an extensive terracing plan was proposed that would actually deal with some of the runoff ahead of time, similar to what they've done in Malibu. But you bring up some interesting points where you have the role of government coming in from an engineering and a remedy situation, where in the case of La Conchita and other coastal areas, one of the things that is preemptive to do some of the solutions, as in La Conchita, is you've got the environmental movement and the Coastal Commission group that's saying that if you begin to re-terrace a hillside, then it moves from a desirable type of solution to something that changes the contour of the land, and it's really complex. They were considering an assessment issue where there was it wasn't that much money per house that was going to be assessed to contribute towards a re-terracing, but it's a drainage issue similar to Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got other political forces other than just an engineering thing that is really affecting the solution in La Conchita.
Yes, Ian Scoble, obviously if this were an easy situation, it wouldn't have been included in the chapter in the book of Hard Cases.
Yes, that's true.
As you look at this issue, obviously, there are a lot of differing interests in all of these different areas. The question being, how imminent does the danger have to be, I guess?
Well, the government has an interest in not encouraging people to engage in risky behaviors. I'm not saying that they should be forbidden to live in places that have a risk, because that often also entails great rewards. Beachfront property in the hurricane zones, for example, is often exquisitely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why somebody might want to live in a place like that. So I'm not saying that the government has an interest in discouraging or forbidding, but they certainly don't have an interest in encouraging. And some of these subsidized insurance programs or requirements that insurance companies offer riders that are affordable to all makes people less aware of the fact that they're transferring the risks of their decisions onto other people, or the costs of their risks onto other people.
To everybody else who wants insurance for anything, yeah.
That's right. For example, I can't afford the sort of beachfront property that enjoys those kinds of subsidies against disasters that are almost certain to occur.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get one more caller in, and this will be Audra. Audra's calling from Gambier, Ohio.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
My question is, if government begins to take property by eminent domain and compensate the property owner, do they not enter into a slippery slope where they, for instance, I live in Ohio, not in beachfront property.
Right.
If I did, my neighbor lives closest to the beach. The government buys their property because it could fall off into the ocean next season. Now the beach is that much closer to my house. When my house falls into the ocean, can I not go after the government? Or is the government not opening itself up to tremendous liability if we begin to purchase property to help people?
Let's avoid the slippery slope analogy. And Ian Scoble, go ahead. We just have a few seconds left, I'm afraid.
Well, the government wouldn't. It's not the government that makes houses fall into the ocean. The government would bear some responsibility, though, if it encouraged people or subsidized people or gave them an incentive to move into property that was on the verge of falling into the ocean. But the government certainly doesn't have any business making people do foolish things or falsely tricking people into doing foolish things. They should, if they know about known hazards of the geography, they should make that public. Audra, thank you. Buyers and to insurance companies.
Audra, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Ian Scoble, thank you for your time today.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Ian Scoble, professor of philosophy at Bridgewater State College in Amherst, Massachusetts. He wrote the chapter Liberty, Policy, and Natural Disasters in the book Liberty and Hard Cases. He was with us by phone from his home in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. When we come back from a short break, we'll remember comedian and late-night television host Johnny Carson. Any special recollections of the King of Late Night? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.